Hello and welcome to Stag Weekend. Today it's the Champions League and European Cup preview show. So that's the football and all the rugby that's coming up in Europe over the next few weeks. So we'll start off with the football. We've got some big games in the quarterfinals. First up, well, I've not introduced my guest today. So first up, I'm Archie Milcliffe presenting the show. Ben Ward is here.
Evening.
And we've got a new star to the show. Mikey's not here because he's late. No one knows what he does in his spare time, and we don't want to know. We've got Deck on the line. How are you doing? Going straight on into the football. The first big game that we're going to talk about is Liverpool v Man City. Two English clubs left in the competition drawn against each other. Ben, what do you think about this game?
It's going to be very exciting. I mean, you've got two of the most attacking teams in Europe going for each other there. I mean, we've seen Liverpool beat Manchester City during the season. That was a thrilling game. I mean, you're going to get fireworks in this game. I mean, I'm predicting big scores. I don't know. What are you thinking, Deck?
For me personally, I think the attack-wise is going to be very, very naughty. But I think City will do it just because of the midfield. You look at the centre mids and just sit like... David Silva is still one of the most underrated players in Europe. Like, if he plays for City, he's just more influential than Pogba when he plays for United.
Mm. Like, and the creativity he brings to the side is phenomenal.
Yeah,
I think he's got, since he's joined the Premier League, he's got the most assists in the Prem, which is a stat that kind of goes under the line.
Does, when he plays like Ozil in there as well.
Yeah, exactly. I know he's been in a little longer than Ozil, but you can't look at that City midfield without having a look at David Silva and Kevin De Bruyne. I mean, have you got a more creative duo anywhere in world football at the moment?
No. No, I'd agree with that.
Unless when Pogba's on his day, get him and Matic. Maybe. There's an argument for it. I think it's one of the most interesting ties around for the neutral, obviously, because we're going to have a big scoreline. Yeah, two English sides. It's going to be big. I think it's going to be a good showcase for the Premier League. Because it's been criticised a lot for not having the talented players that I once did in the 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
They haven't properly made it through in the Champions League for quite a number of seasons now. I think Manchester United and Liverpool were the last last season to win it.
It's going to be good to see as well, because Liverpool are going to have a psychological advantage after beating City in that amazing 4-3 game in January. So I think the players there, they're going to have even more motivation, along with Klopp, who loves to invigorate and like give big team talks and just really energise the players for the match. But then again, it's Pep Guardiola, best manager in the world. Even better than Mourinho, you could say. I mean, if we're being honest.
I don't think there's a question there. I think it is by far the better.
I think we're all in agreement. Man City are the favourites. Mm. So how could Liverpool win this game?
I think if they play very much how they played against Manchester City before and sit deep, wait to take them on the counter, let Manchester City take up all the possession. I mean, where Man United beat Liverpool was they just played them at their own game. They let Liverpool have the majority of the possession and then beat them on the counter. Because you've got the pace of Mane, Salah and Firmino up front. You're going to be able to dominate the back three on those fast-paced counter-attacks. But there's always the danger of giving Man City too much possession. Because they are very clinical in attack.
I don't think they've got too much of a risk in that. They're using Klopp's signature pressing style, and that worked so well in their victory in January. But then you can't discount City still played badly and scored three goals against Liverpool.
Mm.
And that was City on a bad day, so they're going to have to be at their very best with Mane and Salah up top. They're going to have to be very effective.
I personally think they're just going to go... If they play their normal game, I think they'll beat Liverpool. But the occasion might get to them. Because I've seen them in previous years, they went to the semis and such. They played well, but they haven't played to the best of their ability.
Yeah, they're very inexperienced in Europe.
De Bruyne was quiet last season when they played in the semis. Like, you know, and that could happen this time round as well, because Liverpool have got a lot of big game players. Like, I mean, I can never see Firmino having a bad day in a big game. Like, I haven't seen it personally.
Well, against Man United, when we absolutely dominated. I mean, it was a well-fought victory, but Firmino was rubbish then, to be fair.
But no, I personally think that's what happened. But
it's nice to see another English team in the semis, because we're going to get one out of this tie. I think it's quite nice to see two English teams make it this far. I mean, was it four or five of the Premier League teams made it through to the knockout round.
Yeah, yeah, which five was win the loss.
Yeah, five, which is phenomenal in compared to recent years. But yeah, no, I can't see it going anywhere other than Man City's way.
You're listening to Stack Radio.
Now join us in the studio. Where have you been, Mikey?
Ah, long story. I'll tell you later.
Tell us
off air.
Oh, if you want more previews like that, drop Mikey a follow on Twitter. It's absolute carnage in the studio right now.
Sorry, I just cause mayhem wherever I go.
On Twitter, we'll be more than happy to slide into your DMs. Okay, so moving on to the next game, Mikey. We've just been talking about Liverpool, Man City, ooh, Champions League.
Yeah.
Give us your little thoughts on that, then we'll move on to Juventus, Real Madrid.
I think that with Liverpool, I wouldn't back either team, because with Liverpool, you literally have no idea. They have the capabilities and the strength going forward to pretty much beat any team in the world, but at the same time, the fragilities and the inconsistency at the back, where they could equally get spanked by a championship team. You just never really know of them. So City, though, incredibly consistent. I think most are expecting them to win, but wouldn't be
so
shocked.
Who do you think is going to go through?
I think it's a bit like Real Madrid in the last round, where I said that although I'd expect PSG to win, I wouldn't write off Real Madrid. In the same way, expect City to win, wouldn't write off Liverpool.
Ben, who's going to win?
I can't see it going any other way than Manchester City, really.
Gotta agree. City.
It's going to be a great two legs, and yeah, I'm going to go Man City. Can't write them off with Pep this season.
You're listening to Stack Radio.
So the next fixture in the Champions League quarterfinals is Juventus versus Real Madrid. It's a huge tie. Two European giants going head-to-head. Mikey, tell us your thoughts on that.
I think they're both two teams with a lot of history in the knockout rounds of the Champions League. Is this a repeat of last year, I want to say? Last year's final? Personally, I'd back Real Madrid. I did in the last round. Ronaldo, as we mentioned in our previous episode, Archie, is in red-hot form. I think that they are absolutely, especially under Zidane, just experts in the Champions League. And I think Juventus haven't... Although they kind of sneaked through against Spurs... That was almost, I feel that Spurs lost it in like the first 15 minutes of that first leg. It wasn't necessarily that Juventus were better over the two legs, because I don't think they were.
I don't agree.
I think it was a lapse in concentration over the course of like, it was literally, if you look at the goals, it was over a total of like 20 minutes out of 180 that Juventus were actually on top.
I don't agree though, because Juventus put in such an emphatic defensive display against Spurs. This is what the Italians do. It's what Chiellini does at the back. Benatia, Buffon, their defence is just so solid. When you've got players like Alexandro as well going up the wing, and then their midfield three of Pjanic, Kadira and Matuidi, they're so solid that Pjanic is kind of the midfield role. He's kind of the quarterback, you say, in American football. So he pulls the strings. Then you've got the dynamism of Matuidi and Kadira flanking him. So those players can all defend really well. And it just leaves really Dybala, Higuain, maybe Cuadrado and Costa on the wings. So with that team, it's just so solid. And I'd say it's a better all-round team than Real Madrid's.
But they've not been as convincing this year. I think Napoli, I'm not sure if they're still in the lead at the moment. They've been leading the table in Italy, and Juventus just haven't been as dominant this year. I don't think they've found quite the same balance that they have in previous years, because in previous years they've been a very well-rounded team who work as a unit. They haven't seemed to have that kind of balance and fluidity this year, especially in the Champions League. I would not say I found them particularly convincing at any point.
Well, on the flip side, Real Madrid, they endured a pretty dismal end to 2017, but in 2018 they've been electric. Mikey, you were saying about Ronaldo's return to form in 2018. He's got 21 goals in 13 games, and along with 4 assists, as you do. So he's back into form. There were questions over his ability, and Mikey just mentioned we've also recorded a podcast that's going to be out probably next week or the week after. We talk about Ronaldo versus Messi and who's going to be the next Ballon d'Or winner, so stay tuned for that. But I think Real Madrid, they're the kings of Europe for a reason. They won it 2 on the bounce, and you can never write them off. Ben, what do you think about this tie?
I think the home game is likely to go the way of Juventus, or a draw. I mean, the defensive prowess that you mentioned earlier, I can't see Real Madrid doing winning both rounds of this tie. 100% I can see them winning the second round, but no, I think Juventus will go into this first game and they'll have a little bit of confidence. I mean, they're always fantastic at home. I mean, with the experienced heads of Buffon and Chiellini, whatnot, I can't see Real Madrid winning this first round. But overall, across both legs, I think it's going to be Real Madrid again.
They just know how to do it.
It comes down to experience of winning in this competition. It's same as what I said against PSG. Yeah, you mentioned earlier with Ronaldo being in electric form in 2018. Yeah, no, I can't see it going past Real.
Deck, do you think Juventus have any chance at all?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a game of a lot of battles, to be honest. If they keep Modric quiet with Matuidi and Kedira, I reckon Juventus will beat them. Because for me, Modric is genuinely one of the most influential player in Real Madrid's team. And then you look at the back. It depends who they play up top. To be honest, Dybala, obviously, immense. But when you've got likes of Mandzukic there, who are big physical players, they might do a lot more trouble than Dybala. Because for me, Ramos in the air isn't what he used to be.
Yeah, well,
for that reason, he can hold the play up and then bring in other players like Douglas Costa and such.
From what I've watched of Juventus this season and last season, Allegri likes to kind of put Mandzukic on a wing.
Yeah.
So then he goes up against a fullback. So this will be Dani Carvajal if he plays on the left wing in a 4-2-3-1. And then Mandzukic is going to win in the air every single time against Carvajal. Because although he's a really good defender, he's got pace, but he's not the biggest presence. So it'll be interesting to see the tactical battle there. Mikey, what do you think about that?
Well, I was just going to make a wider point about actually Real Madrid in the last round. And what we have to remember is that they've gotten a lot of criticism for their performance, but they beat a team who, previously to this Champions League starting, were considered the favourites. And when you think about that, the team that PSG have, Real Madrid didn't just like scrape through. They beat them fairly convincingly. And I think that's something you do have to keep in mind. Whereas, again, I keep mentioning, I understand they had a good defensive display, but Juventus looked the weaker side against Spurs, and on the whole, it was kind of very short bursts that they were able to get past them. And that does show their experience at winning, but it just shows that they weren't quite as convincing as many would hope, and they didn't even win their group. They came second in it. Was that a group with Barcelona, I want to say, that Juventus were in? Yeah, and
no, Juventus... Were Juventus in a group with Real Madrid?
No, because then they wouldn't have ended up in the same knockout round.
I was thinking of Spurs' group, yes.
Yeah, it was Spurs who actually won their group over Real Madrid.
So neither side have looked too convincing in the knockouts in the group stage, but in the knockout stages, you've kind of seen Real Madrid take their crown back.
Absolutely.
So
I think Dex hit the nail on the head, I'd just say, before we do wrap up, in that Modric will be a key player, because the midfield is where Juventus tend to try and that's where they win or lose matches, and last year that's where we saw Real Madrid dominate them. It was in Modric absolutely pulling the strings all around the park. If they're able to shut him down, they've got a chance. If not,
predictions
not at all.
Then
Real Madrid over to win both legs, I'd say.
Real Madrid to win overall, but not both legs.
I really want Juventus to win, but I have to go Madrid. I really want Juventus, but yeah.
I'm going for a Juve win. They're going to do it for Buffon. He deserves it before he retires.
That's what I want.
Okay, so another big tie of the round is Sevilla versus Bayern Munich. Sevilla got through by beating Man United. They were the better team. Bayern have kind of easily got there. They've kind of had quite easy fixtures. They played Besiktas in the round of 32. The round of 16, sorry. So I can't really see this going any other way than to Bayern Munich. Mikey, we had quite a big discussion about Bayern Munich in the upcoming episode. What do you think about their chances?
I think that they've been quietly going about their business this year. They've lost very few matches and they've been very convincing. And this may sound a bit weird, but I do actually think that their convincing win over Besiktas was just knocked off, sort of written off as, oh, you know, it's Besiktas, they've not really, they're not that good a team, Bayern Munich were always going to win. But Besiktas won their group, and they were very convincing in doing so. They won by, like, a clear distance, and they've been looking good all year, and they've got sort of a lot of pedigree throughout their team. They've got Pepe at the back, who, if you're talking about Real Madrid knowing how to win, Pepe's been part of those teams that have won three of the last four. If you look at on the wing, they've got Quaresma, who won the Euros, sort of a lot of leadership throughout their team, and they just absolutely battered them. And if you look at the options that Bayern have got across the field, and when they've got, now that Harry Kane's injured, I'd say, apart from maybe Aguero, the undisputed best number nine in the world, Lewandowski, and the defensive solidity we've got, we talked about Hummels, Boateng, Kimmich, Alaba, as a back four, that is possibly one of the strongest back fours in the world. You've got Neuer, who's still, not maybe not the force he was, but still an absolute...
Well, the big thing for this round is Neuer's still injured.
But even still, they've got not amazing backups, but they've got Ulreich, who's a pretty good backup, and they've got, I want to say, an 18-year-old who's like 6'6" or something like that, who's absolutely immense, who's been sort of fast-tracked into the first team. They've got options there, and when you look at, they've got the best number nine in the world, they've got one of the best defences in the world. I think that Sevilla were good, but got through on tactical incompetency from Mourinho. I don't think that they're going to be... I think I'm just happy that I didn't have to see United play against Bayern this round. I think that would have just killed my love
Definitely
for football.
Spared our blushes.
Oh, would have killed my love for football just seeing I was getting absolutely battered by them. Gotta be Bayern.
Ben, we know Bayern are a good side, but can you see Sevilla coming into it at all?
I don't know. Sevilla have quite a rich history when it comes to knockout rounds, albeit it's in the Europa League rather than the Champions League.
And under Unai Emery.
Yeah. I mean, Sevilla have been doing pretty well this season. Like, they're top three side at the moment, aren't they?
Top four.
Yeah, top three, top four side. So
they've fallen behind Real Madrid, I believe.
Oh, okay. So, but no, they're coming into this in quite a rich vein of form.
Mm.
I mean, I personally don't see it going any other way than Bayern Munich, but I can quite easily see Sevilla giving them a good run for their money. For all the things that Michael mentioned earlier, I can't see it going past Real Madrid, Bayern Munich.
Yeah, I'd say the same. I mean, Sevilla, they do have a lot of flair in their side and a lot of pace, which... For me, and if Bayern are a bit flat, they could do them. Hmm. I mean, to be honest, and also the likes of Nzonzi, in the Premier League, he wasn't amazing, but
he's done so well in Spain,
He's been amazing, and you can't fault that at all. And his form in the Champions League, as we've seen, is quality. And I mean, Vasquez as well. Hmm. I mean, Vasquez has been sublime.
Yeah, Sevilla, actually, me and Ben were just checking. We've got Sevilla and Valencia mixed up there. Sevilla are down in sixth, being caught up on by Girona, and they've lost their last two matches.
Yeah, so they beat United in Europe.
And then lost to Leganés.
That is
Leganés,
a joke.
Who are down in 12th, and that's the last two matches that Sevilla's lost, as I mentioned, three in the last five. Closer to Real Betis and Getafe than they are to Valencia and Real Madrid. And then if you have a look at, say, Bayern, who I think we looked at in the episode that's coming up, they are in an incredibly rich vein of form.
Lost
their last game, but they've got 66 points from 27 matches, which is not quite the same, but a fairly comparable record to how City have been doing in the Premier League. They're much closer to that than any other teams really leading, except for maybe PSG. But PSG and City are just head and shoulders above everyone else. And Bayern are on 66 points, the next team on 49 points.
Playing devil's advocate here, you could argue that because Bayern are in such a tin pot league, we do kind of slate the Bundesliga a bit in the upcoming episode. But it's true. Dortmund are getting better, especially with Batshuayi up front, but still they're not the team they were a few years ago when they did have Goetze and Lewandowski. They've not really got any other competition, and you could argue that their route to the quarterfinals has been really easy against Besiktas.
So,
they were a good side, okay, but they're not one of these European giants like team that Sevilla had to face in Man United.
But if
Sevilla have battled there, they've had the experience, that's going to make them closer as a side.
But if they had gotten through against Besiktas and done it just comfortably, then I'd agree with you. They won something like 10-1 over the two legs or something.
It was
ridiculous.
8-1 on aggregate.
8-1 on aggregate. That is an absolute battering. And against, they might not be a juggernaut. They are not they're not seven goals worse off than a team who are not absolutely fantastic, if you get what I mean.
Okay, so we've had a bit of analysis, but score predictions, Dec.
I reckon Sevilla, say, not been great in the league. I reckon, yeah, it's gonna be Bayern. It's got to be Bayern.
Mm. Yeah, Bayern, everyone.
Yeah, Bayern over both legs.
Yeah,
can't see past it.
You're listening to Stack Radio.
Barcelona versus Roma. It's another interesting game. One side who are absolutely smashing their league is in Barcelona, as they do every year, versus Roma. I think they're kind of struggling in the Serie A, aren't they, Ben?
They're in third.
Yeah, they're third, but they're 14 points off second.
Well, it's been Napoli
it's,
and Juventus.
Yeah, it's a straight show up. I made a mistake earlier when I said that Juventus were in second. They are in first, but Napoli are 2 points behind them, right on their tail. And then it's kind of a group of Roma, Inter, Lazio. I believe there was... Sampdoria were with them for quite a while, but they've kind of hit a very terrible run of form. It's very much just Roma, Inter, Lazio, kind of AC Milan coming back into it. I would point to the fact, though, that I actually think that Roma do actually have a chance in this. Because if you look, they were very good in their group. They were in a very, very competent group that had, off the top of my head... Chelsea and Atletico Madrid knocked out Atletico Madrid, who, if we're talking about Champions League pedigree and knowing how to win, they're one of those sides who have an incredibly solid base. They didn't even make it through. They beat Chelsea, who gave Barcelona a lot of problems in the last leg, especially that first leg. I think... the first leg, the missed chances, the Willian balls onto the post, I think that may be where Chelsea lost it, because if those go in, they were really, really doing well against Barcelona and causing them problems. And that may have shown to Roma a way for them to kind of get under the chinks in those armour, the chinks in the armour of Barcelona, who, if we're talking about comfortable in the league, they are 11 points ahead of Atletico. They're kind of plain sailing, still haven't lost in the league. That's not really testing them week in, week out. They've not really had a big match against really tough opposition in a while. Even Chelsea, who gave them problems, came into it on a back. Now they've kind of recovered a little. You'll be the expert on this deck as the Chelsea fan, but they came into it on a run of terrible form, didn't they?
Yeah, to be honest, I thought we were going to get battered, but then William played immensely. Mm. Team John played immensely. But they said Barca weren't that great, to be honest. Mm. Like, although I want to big up Chelsea, in reality, Barca were poor. And at the new camp, yeah, they beat us comfortably. But even then, they weren't really that convincing. Like, to be honest, I can see Roma doing this here, because for me, Dzeko is so underrated.
Oh, when he played us, quality.
Dzeko was quality. He ran the game, holding up the play. Like, he was immense. And yes, Barca have an amazing defense, you know, and Tini and such. But still, I can see.
Well, the thing is, though, their most instrumental player, Sergio Busquets, he's ruled out of this tie. I think he's injured.
Most instrumental.
Barcelona fans have said he's more instrumental than Messi. That has been said.
He is instrumental to the way they play, and that he allows the kind of creative freedom that the rest of the midfield has.
He's such an underrated player because of the role
he plays. He's incredible, but I think Messi is... if someone's going to decide this tie to me, it's Messi.
You also got to remember they've got Luis Suarez in good form himself. Mm. Ousmane Dembele's come back.
Yeah.
And on their right side, combining with Messi, he's looked electric. Another thing they won't have as well as Busquets is Coutinho, who's obviously cup tied.
Mm-hmm.
He's come in, he's played a really good role on the left wing, but I think Iniesta just slots in. Barcelona have been playing kind of 4-4-2, and that's been doing really well in the league. So it can be a 4-4-2 with Iniesta and Dembele on the wings, with up front Messi and Suarez, who are just going to wreak havoc against Roma's defence. I can't see past Barcelona, even though Roma have been doing good. Barca are about a couple of key men. You can't look past them, can you?
I'm probably going to look silly in saying this. I'm going to back Roma. Last round, I called the big upset in that I said that Real Madrid were going to beat PSG, but I didn't back myself enough to say absolutely. I'm backing myself
Real
now.
Real Madrid beating PSG, not an upset.
It was at the time, because they came in on terrible form, and PSG have come in on the fact that they are a scary looking team. And when you look at that front three, we were talking about it and you were telling me that I was being a bit silly and saying that Real Madrid were going to win. I'm calling Roma beating Barcelona. It's going to happen.
I, like you, Archie, can't see it going anywhere other than Barcelona. I mean, that's playing the safe option. I definitely think there'll be exciting games. Roma, very good side. But yeah, Barcelona got the pedigree and the players to really push through in this competition.
Finally, Deck.
I might go Michael here, purely because...
Oh, no.
Streetman.
Podcast going down the drain.
And also, yes, their defence isn't the best, but my God, it's got experience. Kolarov, Gran Jesus, like, they're Fazio, like, they, yes, they're not the best, but they'll keep their heads, you know? They won't. The occasion won't be too intimidating.
Mm. So you think they're gonna see the better of Suarez, Messi, Iniesta, Dembele?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't it's think you realise how mate. Good Nainggolan is. Like, I generally
Nainggolan, Nainggolan, you what?
Nainggolan.
Nainggolan.
No. Get it right, come on, it's a factual sports podcast. Right, it's the end of the football now, we'll move on to the rugby. 13:50 AM. Welcome back to Stag Weekend. Okay, so we've actually kicked out Deck because he self-proclaimedly knows nothing about rugby.
Why are you still here then?
Well, you know, I'm just hanging on for dear life, boys. Yeah, so we're moving on to the rugby now. Let's go straight into it with the Champions Cup. There's some big fixtures this week coming up. It'll be this weekend because we're dropping this on the upcoming Monday. So yeah, Scarlets versus La Rochelle is huge.
Oh, that's going to be exciting.
Ben, I can tell you are great rugby, very, very, very excited.
I am so happy that it's the Easter holidays because it means I can watch as much rugby as I want. I mean, I...
Sad little man.
Very sad. But Scarlets, La Rochelle, what a game that's going to be. I mean, you've got two of the most exciting teams out there in European rugby at the moment. Scarlets, you saw the way that Wales played with 6 out of 7 of their back line being Scarlets players against Scotland. I mean, they just play beautiful rugby. And you're up against La Rochelle, who, although haven't been around on the European front for the last couple of years, they have been doing phenomenally well the past few years. They've brushed aside teams like London Wasps. They cruised into the European qualifying places. It's going to be an exciting game. It'll be minimum 60 points overall.
Thing is with La Rochelle, they've not got this pedigree we've kind of spoken about with football, but that doesn't seem to matter this season. They're blitzing away sides for fun.
They're very
and they
much,
thrash Wasps, we've got to remember, in one of the last rounds.
They're very much the Exeter of French rugby in the respect that they haven't got fantastic individual players. They've got one or two, but what they've got is a fantastic unit and a team that they just seem to know where everyone is on the pitch.
Yeah,
and it's just phenomenal rugby they play. But personally, I think it'll go the way of Scarlets purely for having the home tie, and their home support is phenomenal. But yeah, it's going to be a very exciting match.
Mikey, have you got any thoughts on this fixture?
I think, like Ben said, it's definitely the pick of the ties. For story, I'd go Leinster Saracens, but if you're talking about just the brand of rugby that we know both teams are going to be playing...
For the neutral, it's the best game.
For the neutral, it's absolutely the best game. I would actually say that one thing that impressed me about La Rochelle over the kind of qualifiers, over the group stages, sorry, is a lot's talked about their free-flowing brand of rugby, how... fantastic they are in the backs, but their forwards were really solid throughout, and in the games where they had to grind things out, where they had to come to rainy nights in England or Scotland, they really came through. And
so you don't often see with the French side.
No, they knew how to adapt to that, which, as you mentioned, something very uncommon for a French side. And they won... Am I right in saying they... No, they got knocked out in the Challenge Cup last year. Sorry, got it mixed up.
Yeah, no, they won the league last year, I believe.
That's what I was going to say. They won...
They topped
points,
the league.
They topped the league.
But they didn't win it in the...
Yeah, because it goes to playoff in France. Similar
to Premiership.
Premiership and Pro 14.
I want to focus on Scarlets as well, because they've been tearing it up. They're a fantastic side. We've seen many of their players on show in the Six Nations. I saw an interesting stat, actually. I retweeted it on Twitter. If you follow me, at @A_Billcliffe. So it's a graph that shows players being rested by their countries. I know we've kind of done Six Nations to death a bit. See our previous podcast for expert analysis. But with the Wales side, Scarlets have chosen to rest pretty much all their players. What's that going to do is make them fresh for this week. They're going to have all their players back at it again. All those household names which perform really well for Wales, they got them to second in the end. People have said that Wales kind of overachieved in this Six Nations, but looking at the way they implemented the Scarlets, especially in the back line, I don't think that's any overachievement.
Their backs were fantastic, but that's what everyone expected from the Scarlets, because that is what they're kind of built on. They're built on Gareth Davies, on Reece Patchell, on Hadley Parks, on their fantastic back three, including Halfpenny, who's come back to Wales and joined them. But one thing that really impressed me was their back row. So you've got Shingler on at six, who is in a lot of people team on the tournament. He's got those sort of long rangey strides, fantastic hands, great in the breakdown. Then on the other side, you've got James Davies, who was fantastic for them against Italy, wasn't able to quite move Navidi. I think Navidia was who was playing at seven for most of it. Who's a fantastic player, so there's no shame in that.
I mean,
but this is a seven who's so mobile and so fantastic with his hands that he was able to play in the Olympic sevens team, did he not?
Yes. Yeah, no, he got
so
silver.
That's just a testament to how mobile and fantastic their back row is.
You talk about the two players there, but you've got to remember that their captain's John Barkley.
John Barkley, you've got a phenomenal,
oh my gosh,
phenomenal player there. Bags of experience.
Does he play at eight for Scarlets?
I'm not 100% sure.
Him and Shingler are both
I think it's more of a rotation. But that back line is phenomenal. And then you've got to look at the try-scoring machines of you've got Steph Evans on the wing. It's going to be an exciting game no matter what.
I can't wait for it. Yeah. Who do we think is going to win then, boys?
I think it depends for me about... I think La Rochelle could be quite smart because they've got a very big pack.
Yeah.
I think for me, where Scarlets would look to be weak are the men we haven't mentioned, the tight five. So if they try and keep things in the scrum, maybe keep things in the line out, that's where I could see La Rochelle having that advantage because they are very strong in their
kind
scrum.
The old adage but that forwards win the game, backs decide by how many.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would, however, say that I think if it were that simple to beat Scarlets, people would have done it a while ago. So I'm and with the fact that the tight five of Scarlets was pretty much not selected during the Six Nations, to my knowledge, I would actually say is it Ken Owens plays for Scarlets? And other than that, it's pretty much all non-Scarlets players in the tight five. I would actually give this to Scarlets.
Yeah, no, I can see Scarlets winning this purely for the fact that they have the home tie.
Well, not that my opinion matters, because apparently I don't watch any rugby, but I'm going Scarlets as well. Okay, so moving on to, Mike, you mentioned another huge game of the round, Leinster versus Saracens. England versus Ireland, another grudge match.
Yeah.
Saris, their players are going to be hurt. Owen Farrell is going to be chomping at the bit. But the thing is, how can they be ready, these Farrells, Atojes and such, when they've not been given any rest? They're all playing this weekend again. It's a joke.
The only two players that aren't playing are Mako and Farrell. Mako is on the bench. Farrell has been rested. But you look at the Leinster side, they're playing all their players this weekend as well. They've got a big tie-up against Ospreys. They may be resting one or two more, but they've put a very strong side out to play Ospreys. But you've got to look, like you said earlier, the Ireland, it's very much the old adage of Ireland versus England. The core of that England squad is built around Saracens players, and the core of the Ireland squad is built around Irish players. So it's going to be a very tight game. Maybe not as open as the Scarlets La Rochelle was last year. Being a Saris fan, it pains me to say that it's going to be very tough.
Well, Ben, you're a Saris fan. Yeah, well, you should have said, mate.
Michael Rhodes is going to make the difference.
I'd laugh if I knew who he was.
But I think if we look at the form coming into the game, obviously we're recording this on the Friday before the weekend. But Sarri's form hasn't been the greatest in the Premiership.
No.
obviously they've had, in the last six games, they've won three, lost 3-2, 2 to Exeter, and 1 to Leicester. They probably should have won that Leicester game.
Mm.
So it'll be interesting to see how they come back, whereas Leinster have had a better, but it's still not good. We were just talking about Scarlets. Leinster drew with Scarlets 10-10 in the Pro 14. They're only lost in the last six, come against Edinburgh, so it's going to be a fascinating matchup. Boys, I'm going to have to ask some result predictions. Ben?
I'm going to have to say Saris, mainly because I'm a Saris fan and I'd love to see them do it 3 years on the bounce, but it's going to be very tough. I'm probably not going to be able to watch the last 15 minutes.
For whichever reason, either because it's tight or because you're getting battered.
But Saris are missing one or two big players. Obviously, Billy's out injured. The likes of Callum Clark, who's been phenomenal this season for Saris, very consistent player. I believe Michael Rhodes is still out injured, so it's going to be very tough.
I mean, personally, I can't see past Leinster. They're playing some brilliant rugby at the moment. I would accuse you of being a bit biased, but obviously we're United fans and we've talked a lot about them recently, so I can't really do that. But no, I think it's going to be another great game. Obviously, with Sexton at 10, you can't rule anything out. Hopefully, it's going to be, as an English fan, I would like to see a huge battle, kind of maybe get one back on the Irish, but I personally can't see that, so I'm going for a Leinster victory.
I would actually say that for me, I would be very, very surprised if Saracens went and win it, come in as the kind of lowest ranked teams of the teams to go through. They barely scraped through a group, including Ospreys and Northampton. They only were actually 3 points ahead of the Ospreys, who started off the season very well, but then since about the halfway mark have been pretty atrocious. Whereas you look at Leinster, didn't lose or draw a single match in a group containing Exeter, the best team in England, who we've mentioned have beaten Saracens two times in the last six matches. Montpellier, who had Louis Picamoles at eight and Nemani Nadolo on the wing, one of the best wingers in all of world rugby. And then in fourth, Glasgow, who are a fantastic team, especially on their day, and Leinster were able to not drop a single point against any of them, on top of, I want to say, a couple of bonus point victories, actually.
Three bonus points.
I would say that I've got to back Leinster here, and one slight prediction I'm going to say is that I think that Farrell is either going to have an incredible game or get a yellow card, and there's no in-between for me. He's either going to do something absolutely idiotic because he's got too amped up, or it's going to be him at his best.
Moving on to the next game, it's Racing 92 versus Clermont. This is going to be a brilliant showcase for French rugby because two brilliant teams. Clermont have been playing scintillating rugby.
They have actually been very poor in the league, Clermont.
The Champions Cup, they've been insane.
Played very well in the Champions Cup, but in the league, they've been a bit lacklustre. Don't really know why. I mean, Clermont have never been fantastic in the league. They've had...
They won last year, so...
But over the last few years. Compared to their Champions Cup record, they've reached the semi-finals, I believe, in the last 4 years. So you've got...
Never quite done it, though.
Yeah, they've always made it through the quarterfinals. It's just the semis and the finals they tend to falter. But Racing have been pretty solid this season. It's probably the least exciting tie, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know, because when you've got Clermont players such as Racco, who's been incredible. Why are you giggling? I actually do watch...
You're reading this off Google, is my guess.
Not at all, mate.
Not at all.
No, Racing have got Teddy Thomas, who lit up the Six Nations, playing really well. Machinot, somebody who was nine of the tournament. And then you've got experience such as Dan Carter. He still plays, right?
Oh, for Racing 92. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about for Clermont still. One thing I might say about Clermont, which might explain the difference between their league form and their Champions Cup form, is if you look at the group, they were in that group with Saracens, and Saracens, especially around that time, very poor form. Ospreys, incredibly poor form. Northampton, how'd they even get in the Champions Cup this year, is what I ask. I would maybe point. I really like the rugby that Clermont play. One player you didn't mention who I think is fantastic is Nick Abendanon.
Has been for a number of years.
I think if he came back to England, that would sort out our back three problems. If you look at, say, a back three of Elliot Daly, Abendanon and Watson, that would be absolutely outstanding. But unfortunately, I feel that we've kind of burnt that bridge. He's not coming back. Whereas Racing 92... came second in a relatively, I wouldn't say it was a weak group, but Munster, Castres, Leicester, I don't think either team are going to be coming into this, at least in the Champions Cup, having been overly impressive. Despite, I think Clermont, if they're winning, are always going to look great just because that's the rugby that they play. They always play just outstanding rugby. But it's a close one, and obviously as a someone who mostly watches, I mostly watch Premiership, Pro 14 and Super Rugby, don't watch a huge amount of French rugby, but based on their league form, based on just a kind of judgment call, I'm going to go for Racing 92 with Dan Carter to be man of the match.
Love that. It's a difficult one.
Very.
Because Clermont have been phenomenal in the European Cup for a number of years. But in the league this year, they're sat down in ninth out of 14 teams, whereas Racing are second in the league, just 4 points behind Montpellier. So if you go off league form and form going into the match, you've got to back Racing. But if you're going off of
pedigree
and history in the league, I mean, it's got to be Clermont. Personally, I'd like to see Clermont get through just so we could perhaps see another Sarri's Clermont game and get a little bit of revenge for the
Sarri's Clermont, you mean Leinster, mate?
No.
No, I think it's going to be interesting. I think if you want to be quite conservative, you go with Racing 92. But if you want to see, if you're expecting a brilliant game, fireworks everywhere, it's hard to look past Clermont. So
hope for Clermont, expect Racing 92 is what I'd say.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair judgment. This
is Stag Radio. So the last tie of the round is obviously Munster versus Toulon. Two brilliant sides, going to be a great fixture. Ben, tell us your thoughts.
Yeah, again, it's two sides who have got a lot of pedigree in this tournament. I mean, Toulon, when they won it, I think it was 3 years on the bounce before the Sarri's dominance came in. And then you've got Munster, who I don't remember a year that they haven't made it through to the quarterfinals. They're just a phenomenal side. Got some absolute class operators in that team with the likes of Conor Murray, CJ Stander. They're going to be coming off the back of a Six Nations Grand Slam. I believe for both of them, it's their first Grand Slam. So they'll be riding high off that.
Yeah, it hasn't been a Grand Slam since where Brian O'Driscoll was captain. So
Conor Murray is your player of the tournament as well.
Yeah, absolutely. He'll be pulling the strings against Toulon. But Toulon have got the players. They've got the spark to make things really happen. Yeah. I mean, you look at, again, ex-Sarri's player Chris Ashton doing bits out in France at the moment. He's got 20 tries in the league already. He's one off the record, and they've still got 7-8 games left to go. It's going to be a very, very
tight
game.
Let's not forget, they got big boy Bastereau in their team.
They have got Bastereau.
Come off a brilliant Six Nations.
Bastereau.
Don't like him as a guy, but love him as a player. He's fantastic. He's been doing it for so long as well.
Bastereau and Mar Nonu in the centres with Matt Gitto playing into them from 10.
I mean, if that lineup was 10 years ago, I think it'd still be as good as it is now.
Toulon, I always find a very interesting team just because I think that they have the players to make things happen. They've got in the forwards just a ton of Georgians, and what more do you want in a forward pack than a bunch of Georgians? They've got kind of a lot of experienced players across the board, but there's something you never want them to win, is what I'd say. Yeah. They're just
because of their stigma.
They're a bunch of mercenaries, and
they're the opposite of a team like Scarlett and Exeter in the respect that they buy individual players rather than a team.
Yeah.
And it's very much each player trying to outplay one another rather than play as
they're kind of the Real Madrid of the rugby for our football listeners, at least, who maybe not have watched much Toulon in the past.
Real Madrid, at least, have some Spanish players, even if they've taken them from other Spanish teams. They've got Spanish players. If you look at their best player, it'd be Tuasova. If you look at their most experienced player, it would probably be someone like Marinonu or Matt Gitto.
Or even Guardado.
Or Guardado and Basso are the real exceptions to the rule. They've got like no French players across the board. I really like watching some of their players play. I think Tuasova is a joy to watch. I'd love to see him in the Premiership or Pro 14. Like, imagine, for example, Tuasova lining up for Glasgow with their brand of rugby. That'd be fantastic to watch. But I really hope that Munster do it. I obviously still a bit bitter as an English fan, but I really like players like Conor Murray. I think he's always comes across fantastically as well. They've still got until the end of the season, Simon Zebo, who maybe... Has it been decided where he's going yet? Or could this even be an audition for him to see where he's going?
I don't think it's been officially released. I'm sure behind the scenes it has been.
But I think where they might want to look is Conor Murray, his kicking has always been fantastic. They may want to look to put a bit of pressure on Chris Ashton, because although he's been fantastic going forward, even if you look as far away as like a few weeks ago, his attempt at a clearance kick, which basically went straight to the opposition winger, he's been playing at fullback.
Yeah, they've been putting him at fullback, and I don't think he's ever played fullback in his life.
The thing is with Ashton, he's a great poacher, bit of a goal hanger, really. But that's all he kind of built a career off. He admitted it himself on a podcast I was listening to, which won't be named, one of our rivals for the number one spot on iTunes. We will get there. Ashton's a fantastic winger in the finishing sense, but he's not got the technical qualities of, say, Anthony Watson.
He follows the ball, Chris Ashton. So when you watch him play, he's a very interesting player to watch, because quite often he will be off of his right wing, and you'll see him like in the middle of the park somewhere, and you'll be thinking, how has he got the ball? And he's somehow made a break off a ruck. He's a phenomenal player, but he's very much one-dimensional. Mm. Like, you know what you're going to get from Ashton.
And he's a real danger man for them, but what my opinion is, I think that if Munster look to target him, because Blendahl, I don't think, is the best 10 around, but not
he's very good though.
But not amazing. Yeah. He's not even probably in the top two for Ireland. Both of Leinster's 10s are ahead of him, but he is a very, from what I've watched, seems a very accurate kicker.
Yes.
So him and Conor Murray, if they can play a very tactical game, put a lot of pressure on Conor Murray. They've got a back three of players who are all in fantastic form. Simon Zebo trying to earn that move, and then Keith Earls and Andrew Trimble, both of whom are fantastic players, and Keith Earls coming off the back of outstanding form. If they put a big chase in on the balls coming to Ashton, I could see them actually maybe finding some joy from that and playing sort of the tactical kicking game. My head says Toulon, but my heart and I am saying Munster.
Personally, I think it's going to go Munster. Again, they're playing it goes down to the fact that they're at home. They've got a phenomenal atmosphere playing at home. Toulon, one of those French sides, so typical of these French sides, where they've got great home record, but their away's a little bit sketchy. So I personally think it'll be Munster going three.
I'm back in the Toulon. I want to see them do. I don't really want to see them do well, but I think it could be a very interesting matchup with those stars Toulon have got. I think if they turn up, like French sides, if they turn up, they're amazing. If they don't, they're not great. But if they do turn up, I'm predicting a big Toulon win.
This is Stag Radio.
That's been our European preview for the quarterfinals of the Champions League and the Champions Cup. We hope you've enjoyed. If you have, remember to leave a review on iTunes or SoundCloud. And remember, keep stagging.